Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back to hour number two inside the Quicken Loans Studios here in Houston, Texas, always giving you the best that we've got. We have scheduled another outstanding guest to provide some insight on the FIFA soccer scandal. Big news coming out on Tuesday with Sepp Blatter unexpectedly saying that he would step down as the FIFA president. He, of course, had just been reelected to the fifth term. And so the scandal, it just continues. Joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line, best-selling author, former New York Times columnist, always one of our favorites. It's going to be so good to hear his voice, George Vesey, up there in New York. How are you, George, on this Friday night?
I am well. I'm high and dry. I hope you are.
Yes, things are finally drying out. So let me recap for the listeners, because it was about a year ago that we had you on the show to discuss your new book, Eight World Cups, My Journey Through the Beauty and Dark Side of Soccer. And I distinctly remember in the book FIFA's dealings and the investigation of corruption. I mean, you talked about that.
Right.
So what was your reaction when you heard about Blatter's resignation?
Well, the resignation I was surprised at. I just think when dictators have their armed guards and personal police, so to speak, to protect them, PR people, you think they're going to go on forever just on sheer brashness, which he did for a long time. But obviously somebody finally had something on him. But I have to say I was stunned.
Hey, George Vesey, with us tonight, Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Remember, we definitely want to hear from you. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. We are breaking down just this whole scandal with the FIFA and Blatter quit. Obviously, pressure, as you're talking about, it was rapidly building from all sides. It seems like it was long overdue. In your mind, was it time for him to go?
Oh, it certainly was. It was well overdue. But first of all, there should be some kind of term limits to people running things, because after a while, they know where the bodies are buried, they know how the money moves around, they accumulate power. So I do understand why there are term limits. Good idea why we have, two-term for president, for say. New York used to have a two-term for mayor. So I really do think it's a good idea. In his case, he abused it from beginning to end. Money was being passed around, American dollar bills were being passed around, and packets, whenever these delegates showed up to vote on things, they'd be given money, $10,000, $20,000 to vote for this thing or that thing, and including to vote for him back in office. So it was a crooked operation, and more came out in the last year or so.
So with Sepp Blatter and his resignation, with this departure, I mean, what's next? I mean, what needs to happen so that FIFA, so they can somehow, George, rehabilitate their image?
Well, that's a good question. I just put something on my own website, georgevesey.com, suggesting that you can't have an American running FIFA because the whole world hates America, and it will just stir up Russia, which is supposed to be the host in 2018, and Qatar, which is supposed to be the host in 2022. There is a very capable guy running the United States Soccer Federation named Sunil Gulati, and he's an insider. I know him quite well. I like him, but you just don't know what people are going to start firing back at him or what people will say. So I think it's got to be an outsider. I would love to see, an American sports leader, someone like David Stern who ran the NBA, or Dick Ebersol, the great sports person from NBC over the years. I'd love to see somebody like that come in and take it over, but they're just not going to have an American like that, American outsider come in.
Okay, you're listening to The Voice. George Vesey, best-selling author, New York Times, longtime columnist with The New York Times. Of course, last year released his book, Eight World Cups, My Journey Through the Beauty and Dark Side of Soccer. And so I want to ask you, while you're on the show tonight, I mean, what is the state of soccer? What is the perception right now? And what kind of impact will this dark side, what's it going to have, some of the residuals?
Interestingly enough, I don't think it will hurt the interest in soccer in the United States, because that was up so high last year. The numbers for the World Cup were at Super Bowl level. I mean, outpolling the Baseball World Series by 2 or 3 to 1. The numbers are amazing. So I think people are not going to stop watching the Champions League on Saturday or, you know, whatever it is. They're not going to stop doing that. But I think they have a more calloused look at the way FIFA operates. People in America, I mean, we've got our own scandals. Look at the steroid scandals. Look at the brain concussion scandals in the NFL. I mean, they're all, you know, they're, many of them are corrupt. But I think people are now looking at FIFA and saying, wow, those guys, soccer is not exactly the kind of weenie sport we thought it was.
There's been some talk, too, George. I mean, should there be like a World Cup boycott to make sure that that this change does take place and that they are headed in the right direction, obviously with some new leadership?
I don't think you as an athlete can appreciate this. I don't think the boycotts ever really work. They certainly don't help the athletes who are in their prime. I have friends, you know, Nancy Lieberman in 1980, not to get to go to Russia for the Olympics. I mean, Anita DeFrance, people like that, great athletes. It never works because you're only hurting yourself. But what I do think is important is to try and find the root causes of it. Russia would be a good host in 2018. They're good enough soccer power. I was there for the Goodwill Games in 1986. They'll do a fine job. Qatar is a different question.
Hey, the FIFA scandal, kind of the X's and O's. I mean, obviously, there's been so much criticism. Would you just mind providing for some of the listeners that have not been following this? I mean, what exactly was taking place?
When Loretta Lynch, who burst on the scene internationally, people didn't know her outside the Eastern District Federal Court in New York, and then she was the Attorney General. But she'd been working on this for a while, and suddenly this dignified, intelligent person is talking about racketeering. It was coming through New York, through the Confederacy, the Federation of Soccer in North America, into Latin Central America. So that money was being changed in New York at CONCACAF, regional headquarters. Mm-hmm. There was a guy named Chuck Blazer who was handling a lot of it. He turned evidence. He's in a wheelchair, I believe. The rumor is he's dying of cancer. Any way you look at it, he's sick, and he's the guy who's turned evidence so that he will not have to go to jail in his final months or whatever he's got.
How much money are we talking about, some of these bribes that went down and took place?
I think billions of dollars changed hands over the years. It was affected by it. In terms of bribes, millions. Probably millions was spent. There's talk of $10 million that South Africa paid to the regional federation, just so that the regional federation, all those little Caribbean nations, would vote for South Africa to be the host in 2010. FIFA was taking so much congratulations for finally moving a World Cup into South Africa. South Africa did a fine job, they're good people, and it was terrific to be there. But the way it got happened was that $10 million was sent by a guy I like very much named Danny Jordan out of Johannesburg, that money was spent in the Caribbean and in the United States to crooked officials.
Hey, George Vesey is with us tonight at YSR, the Biggie Sports Show. We'd love to hear from you. And, of course, we are interactive. You can join us at Twitter, at eRadioSports. And also, you can email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. We want to remind all of you to listen to the show on the go. You can download the Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store. So, George, when this investigation, when it's complete, what are we going to learn?
Well, I think we'll learn that money can corrupt almost or maybe everything, and we're going to learn, I hope, ultimately, just how far it went. I mean, Blatter, the trail was getting closer and closer to him. When this $10 million thing came out, that was clearly time. One of his lawyers undoubtedly said, if you resign now with a shred of dignity, you can stay in Switzerland, you don't have to be traveling around. He probably was going to be subpoenaed in the United States for evidence, which meant, I don't know if you remember the movie White Nights, where Baryshnikov plays a dancer who's caught back in Russia. His plane goes back to Russia, and now he's their prisoner again. I could see Blatter having to change planes or something in the United States and having some federal deputy say, Mr. Blatter, could you come with me? So that's how he was going to finish out his term as president.
Much more talk about the FIFA scandal coming up right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, with George Vesey, bestselling author and New York Times columnist. right after this commercial break. Hey, we can start early at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Biggie Sports Show. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell. We are going on this Friday night one-on-one with George Vesey. He is well-known. He's a best-selling author, New York Times columnist, and of course released his book last year, Eight World Cups, My Journey Through the Beauty and Dark Side of Soccer. And we're so glad to have him with us here in hour number two. Just give us a quick hit. I mean, how has the book been received since we've...
Well, the book did very well last year for reviews, for attention. I was all over the place. And one of the things I mentioned in my preface from last year was how thrilled I was to plug into the radio and TV, what you call local or regional people. And 10, 20 years ago, you wouldn't have gotten the expertise. Now I was calling, you know, Pittsburgh. I talk about calling up to South Dakota somewhere, you know, the Southwest, the Southeast. People are asking questions, which tells they've been watching the World Cup, paying some attention. It's a different United States in relationship to soccer. So that was one of the things I learned last year.
Okay, so let's get back to talking about the FIFA scandal. Who should, as you said, remind the listeners, I mean, who do you think should take Blatter's place?
Very hard to say. There's Prince Ali of Jordan, who's a very worldly, modern person, educated. He's been outside the country. I think that he could take it over. He was the candidate who ran against Blatter last week, and he certainly is the leading candidate going on. I do mention on my website now Sunil Gulati, who's the American, who's of Indian descent, but he grew up in the United States, and he's as American. I say he's American as apple pie or vegetarian samosa. But the point is that he's very capable. He's been in soccer all his life as an adult. He's a referee, official. He certainly could, but I don't think it's going to help to be an insider or an American in the foreseeable future.
Well, George, okay, now I watched the live television coverage of the election that was taking place last week. So what was the motivation there? I mean, why did Prince Ali, why did he withdraw?
He withdrew because he knew that the first round was, you had to have a certain majority, and I forget what it was, two-thirds or something like that. And he didn't get, Blatter did not get that. Ali kept him from getting it. But the second round was straight majority. You know, one vote margin would win. And he knew that he wasn't going to win. And I think it was an act of statesmanship on his part. I mean, nobody, whether a prince or just an ordinary politician, wants to go into something knowing that you're just going to waste a couple of hours and get knocked off by, you know, 50 votes or 75 votes. I mean, they're pretty smart. So it basically was a technicality. It wasn't giving up heart.
So, of course, as the story goes, FIFA re-elects Sepp Blatter. He steps down. But just out of curiosity, I mean, what kind of impact do you think Prince Ali could have made?
It's very hard to say. I do know that, like people used to say about the Rockefellers when they were running New York State and West Virginia and all over the place, too rich to steal. So maybe that would work for someone like that. I do know that that's quite a progressive modern nation, and I respect, you know, everything you read about, you know, the developments in the Middle East, that that's a country that addresses things with some rationality. So I would tend to have a little bit more, quite a bit more respect or curiosity into him. Can't say I know a whole lot about him. But the fact that Sunil Gulati, who represents the United States, and all eyes are watching what the American does, for him to, A, announce his vote, B, actually vote for Prince Ali, and then C, at the end of the vote, to go up and give the losing candidate a big hug, that was before Blatter resigned. So Sunil was really bringing it in on himself, like, hey, I did this. This is what the United States did. What pressures he had. I wrote something on my website a week or so ago that the one way that Blatter was going to go was for American sponsors, corporations like, and I mentioned Coca-Cola and Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett's got a great nose for doing things the right way. I have a lot of respect for him. And all of a sudden, Coca-Cola, as a major sponsor, was being dragged down in image by FIFA. So I was going to say that the Coca-Colas of the world had to go in there and tell Blatter, your time is up, we're not giving you any more money.
Okay, so George, what's the timetable to replace Blatter?
There's a three-month waiting period. You have to notify the delegates to prepare for 3 months. So Blatter is still working, although there has been some kind of regent set up to run, to keep an eye on everything, and his name hasn't been in the papers. But Blatter basically is going to be in charge until they hold the vote, nominally in charge, and then they'll have it. But it's still 3 months out.
Hey, George Vesey has been with us tonight at YSR, the big esports show, always one of our favorite guests. And before we close out the interview, we got a couple minutes left. Hey, talk to us about, give us a forecast on the Women's Cut, the 2015. It is rapidly approaching, and I know you're a big fan. You're excited.
I am. I covered a couple of Women's World Cups in 99 and 2003, both of them in the United States. And the 99 team was one of the great 96
Olympics.
Oh,
it was awesome.
99. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Did you ever see them play in person?
Not in person, but...
Okay. I mean, you as an athlete, this was the American dream team,
yeah,
every bit as much as the American basketball team in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
The number of great athletes, great personalities, charismatic, smart, there'll never be another American team. Forget about women. There'll never be another American team that could be better in any sense of winning the two championships. But the U.S. hasn't won since 1999. And I don't think that they're a dominant team now. They may win, but they're not a powerhouse. You don't look at them and say, well, they're an obvious favorite.
How deep do you think they will go?
Oh, I think they should be a semifinalist, but they're not that good. They don't have the imagination, the talent, the drive. It's not a team that you look at and say, wow. You know, like you look at the two finalists in the NBA or something, mm-hmm, and say, those teams are so deep and so many. They just don't impress you enough. Technically, they're fine. They've got Abby Wambach. They've got a couple of other nice players. Rampone is a good player, too, and older. But basically, the pack has caught up with him. Germany, France, Japan. U.S. has had some. Canada's looking for the United States.
Right.
So it's going to be a tough World Cup. And I've mentioned four teams plus the U.S., which tells me that the semifinals could be a hard drive.
Hey, what's your view? Last question now. What's your view of women's soccer here in the United States?
Well, I wish it were more popular. I wish there were more money in it for them. The evidence is that men pay to go watch sports events, women not as much. That could change, but it didn't for the first couple of versions of this pro soccer league. Basketball has improved. I mean, women are terrific in basketball. They're doing things that you couldn't imagine women doing 20 years ago on the court, you know, going up, going around people, physicality. So soccer is the same way, and men have to get used to the fact that there's not as much power, not as much speed as in the men's game, but these women, and you know what about women's soccer?
Hmm.
They don't fall down. They don't dive. I'll never understand it, why Neymar of Brazil, when he gets kicked, he goes down like he's being killed.
Mm-hmm.
When an American player like Abby Wambach gets hit, she keeps running. Right. Amazing.
Hey, George Vesey has been with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Again, you can go out and get a copy of his book, 8 World Cups, My Journey Through the Beauty and the Dark Side of Soccer, and it is a compelling read. Congratulations, George. We look forward to your next book, okay?
Anytime. Always like talking to you.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Stay close. Okay, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. We'd love to hear from you. You can email the show at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. You can always join us at Twitter, at E-Radio Sports. And remember, hey, you can listen to the show on the go. Just download the Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store. You can also listen on any computer or smart device by going to streamysr.com. That's streamysr.com. Normal data rates apply. Well, right now we have a very special guest in studio. That is our own producer, Joe George. He joined us about a month ago right here at YSR. He's a Chicago boy, just graduated from college. Congratulations on that. And good
Thank
evening.
You.
It's nice to have you with us.
Yeah, it's nice to be on with you, Alyssa. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we are so excited about this new partnership and moving forward. And one thing I love about Joe is he is a basketball aficionado. He absolutely loves hoops, don't you?
Oh, basketball is the best sport in the world. It doesn't get any better than that. It really doesn't.
Do you have a preference? I mean, do you like the NBA more than, say, the college?
Yeah, I do. I like college basketball so much during March Madness, and that's so much fun. But it's become such a boring game at times, and there's been such bad basketball. Like, when you watch, like, Purdue versus Illinois, like, I'm a Big Ten guy, so if I watch Purdue versus Illinois, you know it's going to be a terrible basketball game. But in the NBA, unless the Spurs sit everybody, you're going to get a good game.
How much do you think the college game is going to be impacted with so many of these coaches now? You got Billy Donovan, you got Fred Hoiberg going to the NBA level. I mean, how much does that ultimately affect the college game, Joe?
Well, I think it helps out Duke and Kentucky and Louisville a lot with their coaches, with Pitino, Coach K, and Calipari. They know they're not going to jump and leave to the NBA. I mean, Coach Cal had a chance to go to the Cavs. He didn't go. So I think it's going to hurt the up-and-comers, the guys who are the next Brad Stevens, the next Fred Hoiberg. their recruits are going to say, well, this guy is going to leave for the NBA at any moment. It's like, how do you know you want to go play for this guy if he may not be there in 2 years, but then you're committed to the school?
Right. Hey, Joe George, our producer right here at YSR, is joining us in studio. The real reason that I had him come on is a few weeks back, he had the opportunity, went back to Chicago, and he had a chance to go to the NBA Combine. So we want to talk about some of those top draft prospects, get his perspective. I mean, he was right there up close and center, and kind of get some of that feedback. But first and foremost, hey, the NBA Finals, that got underway on Thursday night. I mean, it was ridiculous, that eight-day layoff. I mean, how difficult was that? Was it hard for you to muscle through? It was for me. I'm like...
It was too much. It's like eight days. Like, I mean, the Stanley Cup for hockey, they finished after the NBA Finals, and they started before the NBA Finals. They had their first game on Wednesday night, so they started before the NBA Finals even.
But you know, Joe, I think that this could be a good thing. I mean, the injury crisis was a very big storyline all season long, and then you had all these concussions, and this really just kind of, I think it makes for a great NBA Finals because it allows the players to get rested and ready, and even for the coaches and their coaching staff, just to kind of recharge, decompress, and then let's give it the best shot that they've got.
Yeah, it does. It really helps with Kyrie Irving for the Cavs, obviously, and then Klay Thompson coming off the concussion. They say he was cleared to play in game one, so now that those guys are both back, it helps so much for these teams. And if they only had 4 or 5 days off, you may not have seen Klay play, especially with the concussion. He may not have been ready. So it definitely helps out a lot, and it's just a bummer still to me that Kevin Love's not playing.
Oh, yeah, but you know what? The Cavs, it seems like they haven't missed him at all.
Oh, yeah, it seems like they're better off without him almost. Like,
you think he's going to be there next year?
No, I think he's going to Boston.
Ah, okay.
I think the Celtics are. I think Brad Stevens is building something really good there, and I like Isaiah Thomas and Marcus Smart. I think if you add Kevin Love there, I think you've got a pretty good chance to make the playoffs next year in the East that's already not that good. So I think he'd be a great fit in Boston.
You know, it's interesting because we were talking in hour one with one of our guests about the college coaches going to the NBA and Billy Donovan and Fred Hoiberg. You just mentioned Brad Stevens. I mean, why do you think he's been able to be different, you know, from some previous college coaches in the past and find success on the NBA level? Obviously, him and Danny Ainge, I mean, they're working great together.
Well, Brad Stevens, he's a young guy, and I think he pulls in the young crowd that he has, the rebuilding mentality. I think he welcomes that, and I think he's able to connect with these players a lot better than maybe Rick Pitino was able to when he was in the NBA, or Coach Calipari when he was in the NBA. I just think Brad Stevens has it. I think it was pretty clear when he was coaching in college that he was going to be a big deal. And I think players really respect him, even though he's so young.
Well, and I know you're a Chicago boy, so obviously the big transition that's taken place with that Tom Thibodeau being out, I mean, could we have ever anticipated that? We'd heard rumblings, but it just really seems like the front office, I mean, if you're a head coach, you better check your ego. And you better be willing to listen to what they want.
Well, yeah, you could tell that it's been at least a year that you've been able to see Gar Forman and Tom Tibbs, Thibodeau, you know, kind of butting heads, and with minutes with Derek and Joakim Noah especially, and even Taj Gibson, they've been butting heads a lot about the playing time, and it never seemed like Tom Thibodeau was going to be able to budge and actually play these guys with less minutes. He was wearing them down, and they didn't like that, especially with Derrick Rose. They didn't like that at all. Or Joakim Noah, too. And I think it was just the point where they couldn't get along anymore. I think Tom Thibodeau is a great coach. I think eventually he'll do great somewhere else. But I think it was time for him and the Bulls to part ways. I think it was definitely the right move, actually.
Is he a coach that became uncoachable?
Yeah. Yeah, he wouldn't change. And like you've seen this in the NFL, with Jim Harbaugh and the San Francisco 49ers, the same way, where he couldn't get along with the front office, so he had to go.
And good point.
Mm-hmm. I think that's just what Tom Thibodeau was. It only works for so long before your locker room turns on you. One of the Chicago guys, one of the hosts for CBS, he said that there were players in their exit interviews that were saying they didn't want Tibbs to be back. And it's shocking to hear, but apparently that's how they felt, so...
And then, of course, we heard the latest news, that he, Tom Thibodeau, had resisted his players wearing that technology that would have monitored the recovery for the Chicago Bulls. I mean, you have to wonder, Joe, I mean, why would he resist that? I mean, that's cutting edge, and that's going to make you have more durability, hopefully.
Yeah, it's really bizarre to see, especially with Derek being your franchise centerpiece and him having the knee injury after knee injury, and... Especially, it was 2 years ago that Derek didn't come back when he was deemed healthy. And it was so bizarre to all the fans because they were like, why is Derek not back? Why is he not back? And maybe this technology would have told them that he was healthy, or then when eventually he came back and tore his other meniscus the second time, maybe that would have not have happened if they would have used this technology. And Joakim Noah has always had the plantar fasciitis, which is a brutal injury for big men. It always has been. Yeah. And if they would have used this technology, maybe they'd be able to avoid that, actually.
Okay, Joe George is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. It's his first time behind the mic. Hey, we are rocking and rolling. Hey, summer's just around the corner, so we're kind of casual on this Friday night. And, of course, he's from Chicago, and I promise we're going to talk about some of the prospects from the NBA Combine that he had an opportunity in the month of May to check out. But what do you think, when you were home in Chicago last weekend, I mean, what was kind of the response from some of the fan base as far as with Fred Hoiberg coming on board? And my other question to you is, I'm concerned about his health. I mean, you have open heart surgery. You don't understand the grind, the demands of being a head coach in this business. It is incredible. It's like unlike anything I've ever seen.
Well, he's had that since he was playing. The year before he retired when he was in the NBA, I think he had his first heart surgery. So I actually think this was a calculated move by him to finally have this surgery. He's needed it for a while, from what I understand. And I think it was him saying, I'm going to have this surgery so I can be the most healthy and go to the NBA. If he wasn't coming to the Bulls and that wasn't the plan all along, I don't think he would have had this surgery. I think he would have just continued the college coaching and not had the surgery. But he had the open heart surgery. Now he says he's healthy and ready to go. So I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think he could use some days off at times. I think it's going to be important for him to get a veteran coach on his as an assistant, so that if he needs a day off, if he's feeling overstressed, that he can take a day off when it comes time. So you can't. I think it would be a mistake to hire like another rookie assistant coach.
We are quickly running out of time. Joe George, our producer at YSR, is joining us in studio tonight. So you had a chance in Chicago to go to those 5-on-5 games, the NBA Combine. Who impressed you the most?
I would say the most impressive guy to me, I was impressed with him in college, was Pat Connaughton from Notre Dame. I thought he had the most to prove this draft because I think he's a late first-round draft pick, maybe a second-rounder. But he also throws a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, and it's in the Baltimore Orioles organization.
Wow.
So NBA teams may not get drafted because NBA teams are worried that they're going to waste the pick and he's going to go play baseball. But he made it really clear to the media and everyone in there that the reason he was at the Combine was because he didn't want to burn the bridge of playing basketball before he focused on baseball. So I think it would be a mistake for someone in the late 20s to pass him up. But I was really impressed with the way he played.
Give us a hit on the Harrison brothers.
Andrew played well. I think he maintained his stock as a middle second-round pick. Aaron, I think, definitely late second-rounder, lucky to get drafted. It's amazing to me to fall off from these guys. They play that hero ball. Every mock draft I've seen has them in the late second round. Both of them are not getting drafted, at least one of them. And it's always Aaron that's left out. So those guys were top 15 picks if they could have come out of high school, and now they're on the verge of not getting drafted and not having any guaranteed money. It's crazy.
Okay, so share with our audience. I mean, I actually have never been to, I mean, I go to the NBA Summer League every year out in Vegas, but I've not been to an NBA Combine. I mean, what is that like? There's got to be a great vibe and energy when you walk into the gym.
It was really cool because you had you got to see guys like Phil Jackson and Derek Fisher. Actually, no, Phil Jackson didn't show up. Derek Fisher walking around and all the...
he took a pretty hard hit for that too.
Yeah, he did. All the young coaches were there, and it was really cool to see and the media was excited, and the players, it's an interesting dynamic because some of them, you know, after you get them after they play a 5-on-5 game, sometimes they're really excited, sometimes they're pretty upset because they didn't play well, and they know that they didn't play well in front of all these scouts. So it's a very interesting dynamic, and I definitely enjoyed going.
Okay, so who is going to be that number one pick June 25th NBA draft?
I think
headed to Minnesota.
I think it should be Jahlil Okafor. I think he is the best player in this draft by far. I know people say his defense, but I don't think he got the chance to show it in college because I think they were worried about his foul trouble because he was so much bigger than everyone else. But I think Minnesota will take Karl-Anthony Towns. I think that's going to be their guy to pair with Wiggins and Rubio. And I don't believe these rumors that they're looking at D'Angelo Russell, number one overall. I don't see it. It would just shock me if that actually happened. So I'll say the Timberwolves are going to take Karl-Anthony Towns.
Oh, that's an awesome breakdown. Our very own Joe George has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. He's going to get behind the board. Good to have you with us. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
You bet. Much more Straight Ahead tonight, right here at YSR. Elissa Walker-Campbell, we're back with you at Yahoo Sports Radio. The Big Esports Show and the NBA Finals, they are finally underway. And we're looking so forward to our next guest, because Michael Jordan and countless NBA stars credit George Mumford with transforming their game. In fact, he has worked with Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal, and George Mumford. He is widely thought of and regarded as Phil Jackson's secret weapon. He has just released his first book. It's his new book that is titled The Mindful Athlete: Secrets to Peer Performance, and he shares his techniques, his strategies that he has used throughout his life and with winners that he coaches. It's such a pleasure to have with us. He's all about pursuing excellence. George Mumford, welcome to the show for the first time.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Oh,
great to be here.
Well, thank you, and congratulations on the book. And right now, we're in the middle of starting the compelling NBA Finals. They're underway on Thursday night. And looking forward to Game 2 on Sunday. I got to ask you this before we dive into your book, since you've worked with so many NBA stars. Who ultimately do you think is going to come out on top, George?
That's a great question. I know folks on both sides, so I don't really have a dog in this fight, but if we go by the tendencies, it seems that if the Golden State Warriors can play defense consistently like they have on occasion, because this is what it comes down to, if they can play defense, then they got a good shot at it. But having said that, you know, it all depends on, you know, the other team. So I think it'll be a great matchup. It's just, I'm just interested to see if this, because if the Warriors can play really good defense with their offense, you would have to give them the edge. But having said that, you know, with LeBron on the other side and Cleveland playing very well and defending, being consistent on the defensive end as well as the offensive end, it's going to be, I think you'd have to lean a little bit towards Cleveland, especially with the experience of LeBron. I think it's a toss-up on some level. But like I said, my concern would be whether the Warriors can defend, and if they could defend, they have a great shot.
Hey, George Mumford, sports psychologist and author. His brand new book is out. It is titled The Mindful Athlete: Secrets to Peer Performance. And so what are the keys to a championship mindset and that mentality?
Yes, well, it's a mindset that, you know, obviously, it's, you know, being able to be focused and being able to be yourself no matter what. So regardless of what the other team is doing, can you play to your strengths and can you play your game? And most teams are going to take the game away from you or put pressure on you. And the real deal is, can you stay mentally tough and physically do what you mentally commit to? But also, it's not just that, it's collective, the cohesive, the team, everybody being on the same page and playing as one. That's really key. But a lot of people will tell you it's deep, you know, defense and rebounding, but at the end of the day, it's the team who scores the most points. So being able to be yourself, execute your stuff, and, you know, to defend, but also, like I say, if you're playing against a team, you want to take away what their strengths are and force them to play in ways or play in a style that they're not comfortable playing in. So it's also matchups. But I'd say the main thing is the team is the most focused and wants it the most and makes the most plays.
Hey, sports psychologist and author George Mumford is with us. Just a few more minutes tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell. Love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at E Radio Sports. And, of course, George, you've got that basketball background. You played at, what, the University of Massachusetts. And I have to share with our audience, your roommate was Dr. J. How cool was that?
Yeah, I roommate with him. I didn't play there officially for the team. So I didn't play for the team. But that was really cool because I got to see his development. I think it's fascinating that I've seen him develop his first varsity game. In those days, people don't know that when you're a freshman, you play for the JV or the freshman team, and then only when you're a sophomore do you play for the varsity. And he was in that category. And so to watch him play his first varsity game and then to see him play his last college game and then to actually accompany him to Portchester in New York once he signed and watched him play in his first semi-pro game, and then obviously seeing him play for the Virginia Squires and just seeing at each level, each time he seemed to be moving to another level. So that was very fascinating. And I think for people who probably don't know it, when he was in college, dunking during the basketball game was not allowed. So he had a lot of dunks that had been saved up over the first 2 years of his college career that he was able to play. And it seemed like he was let out of, I won't say prison, but let's just say that there was much more space for him to create and to be who he became. So I saw him evolving, and I saw his process of development and his mental. The interesting thing is, back then it was like you just loved playing basketball. I'm not saying you don't now, but it was less of a business. And I think that, you know, his love for the game and him playing basketball, going to practice, being on the court was a love, and it was like his oasis. That's where he had the most peace.
It was like a sanctuary.
So, yeah, it was a sanctuary. So, and then to be able to play, it was, you know, like I would do this for free because I love it, but I don't have to because I love it, and that is a space for me to be myself and really express maybe why I'm here, why God put me here, is I'm able to. But I worked really hard. He worked extremely hard, and he had full commitment to pursue the excellence.
Sports psychologist, author George Mumford has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. I want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of his book. It is everywhere on Amazon.com. The Mindful Athlete, Secrets to Pure Performance. And everything is an inner game. Pure performance, of course, it starts with the game. It's what's in, what's on your mind. It determines how you perform. And that is what George talks about in the book. And there's so much more. We want to get you back on. We're going to be out in Vegas for NBA Summer League. And we'd like to get you back on the show then and go into your book a little bit more. Okay, George?
Yeah, well, I'll actually be there with the Knicks, so that'll be fun. I'll actually physically be there.
Outstanding. We'll bring your shoes and let's go hoop it up. Come on, George.
Okay. Well, I won't do that, but I can hang with you and we can chat and do whatever. But I'll be looking forward to seeing you.
Absolutely. Look forward to meeting you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Have a good one.
Absolutely. Take care. That, of course, was author George Mumford. The title of his book is The Mindful Athlete, Secrets to Pure Performance. And right now, we want to thank all of our amazing guests, our lineup. My guy, Lee Klein, contributor with Slam Magazine. He's getting ready for his 5-star basketball camp that's going to get underway this month. Andy Pondillo, our MLB news and notes. He's the lucky charm for those Houston Astros. And Joe George making his first appearance tonight on the Big E Sports Show. Great job, Joe. And also Jeff Garcia with Project Spurs, NBA blogger, and George Vessey, best-selling author and New York Times columnist. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell. Remember, don't you dare drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports right here at your network of choice, Yahoo Sports Radio and YahooSportsRadio.com.